Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. My dear friends, I'm coming to understand that what actually is going on is so different from what you grew up certain about that the truth can be hard to get your mind around. What? Both Christianity and science are basically wrong? How is that even possible? And if they're both wrong, then how can I find a rock of truth on which to stand? We have wonderful guests in the wings for you through the first quarter of next year, but for today, our guest is your host. I'm realizing that many people are finding what I'm telling them about death, the afterlife, God, the greater reality, exactly what is going on, to be just too good to be true. To them, it seems magical, but it isn't magical. It's basically science. And eventually, this work is going to be done much better for you by actual scientists. But for now, we're stuck with just curious researchers, like lawyers, like Victor Zammit and me, who know how to do careful research and how to assemble a case, and so we do that. Then we make our case to you. But what we're doing in researching and coming to understand these evidence-based truths is something that you easily can do for yourself. And you'll be better off if you do at least some of this research yourself. Why should you just believe me? In fact, I wouldn't just believe me if I were you. I refused to believe anyone when I began to do serious afterlife research. I had to do it all for myself and for the most important possible reason. The news was so good that I never could have believed it if I hadn't proved to myself that it was true. I've been hearing lately from a number of people who still are struggling to believe what seems to them to be too good to be true, and I think you and I really need to talk about this. I'm going to take you through a condensed version of my own decades of research, what the process is, and help you begin to build for yourself what is really the most important case of our lives. I think I've told you what got me started on this. I got started wanting to understand the truth when I was very young, and I've told this story a number of times, but I'll tell it again just quickly. When I was 8 years old, and this was in April of 1955, I believe it was April 9th, that's how much it stuck in my mind. I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was sure there is no God. I was a good little Christian child. I was devastated. And in the midst of my terror, there was a flash of bright white light in my room. It was just a flash, but to this day, and you know, it's more than 60 years later, to this day, I still remember what that room looked like. I remember the awful wallpaper. I remember where the dolls were. I remember there was a little horse, plastic horse, right here beside my bed. I remember it all. It was vivid as you can possibly imagine, just that flash of light. And as the flash was fading, a male voice said, young male voice, you wouldn't know what it is to have me if you didn't know what it is to be without me. I will never leave you again. Now, when you're 8, everything surprises you, right? So nothing really does. At the time, I thought it was really handy that if you forget there's a God, they remind you. And I went back to sleep. But it's in the nature of these experiences that they remain in your mind as if they just happened. It still feels as if that just happened last night. And it was, you know, almost 70 years ago, 60 some odd years ago. So from that moment on, and I never told anyone. That's another thing about these experiences. You never tell anybody what happened to you because it's too personal. It's too weird. You don't want people to say, no, that didn't happen, when you know it did. So I kept thinking I was going to find out what that experience was. You know, and as you grow up, you learn how to drive, what the facts are of life. Eventually you learn what happens if you forget there's a God. I thought it would just be natural in Sunday school or school or at home. but you never ask a question, you never get an answer. So I went to one of the best colleges in the country, and I majored in early Christian history because I thought, you know, for sure, when you're in college, they're going to tell you what happens if you forget there's a God. But again, no question asked, no answer given. I was pretty frustrated by the time I was 20, and I had the same experience again. I came home, this is middle of the day, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, came home from my summer job, sat down on my bed going, ugh, I can't stand this. This is terrible. What am I going to do with a religion major? And over my shoulder, flashing in the room, was the same white light. This time there was music with it, sort of like tiny bells, but playing melodiously. And the same voice said, I will never leave you. That was when I knew that what I remembered from childhood really had happened. And from that time on, I've known a couple of things. I've known there always is a God. Never, ever is any of us alone. Remember that. You are never alone. You have a host of helpers and friends, which we'll talk about in other episodes. But God is always with you. And I always knew that. And the other thing that experience did for me was to make me desperate to know what the heck is going on. Where did that come from? It was real. And yet, where did it come from? Mm-hmm. So that was what started me on my quest. At first, there wasn't much available. We were talking around 1970. There's not much information available. I have a little pathetic group of books I bought at the time, but they didn't tell you much. The miracle was that in 1975, Raymond Moody published Life After Life. Life After Life was about near-death experiences. He coined the term near-death experiences. He's a hero in our field and actually should be a hero to everyone. So I started reading about NDEs, and that was really exciting and wonderful. And I couldn't get enough of trying to understand them. They were clearly real. These people had all had real experiences, but for reasons that I guess I'll get into later, I came to think that those people never had really had gone where the dead are. The main problem was that their experiences, what had happened during those NDEs, was just too different one to another. Some went through a tunnel, some didn't, some met, you know, God, some didn't. And it was clear to me there was not a real process there. It was an extraordinary experience, but it wasn't really death. They had not come. And here's a tell. In many NDEs that are extensive and go on for a long time, people get to a point where they're told, if you go any farther, you will not be able to go back. There is a boundary between where the NDE experiences are and where the dead are. It's a one-way trip to go to where the dead are. So I wanted to know more. But the great thing was that what Life After Life unleashed was a flood of books about death, completed death. And the great thing about books is that they have appendices, and they have bibliographies. They have information that comes to us, and that you can sort of it's like a menu that you can use to come up with a broader reading list. What I discovered when I was checking the books on the bibliographies of some of the books that came out in the late 70s, early 80s was, there has been a flood of really good communications from the dead received beginning late in the 19th century and going almost to the middle of the 20th century. These were communications primarily received through deep trance mediums, which almost don't exist today. They certainly are not performing for the public. A deep trance medium is different from a mental medium. These people are able to go into such a deep trance that they literally withdraw from their bodies. And their control, a dead person with psychic abilities, takes over the body and talks. This allows for much better communication with the dead than comes through a mental medium, even the best of them. There are whole conversations that were had in 1910 in living rooms as people talked to their dead relatives by means of these deep trance mediums. Extraordinary information was received. And there were researchers at the time who were very serious people. They knew what they were witnessing was extraordinary and really was proof of life after death. So there was exhaustive documentation given by these people. They would sit there, take notes. They would investigate whether the things said were true, because of course the relatives in the room are listening and eager to validate. And yeah, I mean, amazing things when you read some of these books that were, you know, they're still in dusty old bookshelves in dusty old used bookstores. That's how I got mine. But I have a shelf of them now. But things would happen. Like one of my favorite stories is the old man who had just died and was so put out with his relatives in the room saying, who was it that put all those papers on top of my will in my bottom drawer, my bottom left drawer, which is where my will is that you're looking all over for, and you can find it. And go find it now. Very cranky old man. We don't change that much after we've died. And, you know, wonderful, uplifting things that people would say to one another. It was as if they really were still alive. And what got me about it was that these deep trance mediums were performing in southern England, southern Great Britain, mainly London area, and also in the eastern U.S., the Boston area and New York. And they all were saying the same things. I have read hundreds of communications received through deep trance mediums and channels in the early part of the 20th century, and I have never found one that was inconsistent in terms of the physics, the geography, the process, the way people dress, the things they do. I say in my book, The Fun of Dying, that it was like reading hundreds of communications from travelers to Fiji over 100-odd years. They all had different experiences, but it was clear that they all were in the same place. It took me probably 3 or 4 years to convince myself by reading, and I just devoured these in my spare time, by reading these communications received through deep trance mediums, I convinced myself that it was impossible for it not to be real. Clearly, we do survive our deaths. It was just the testimony of the dead themselves was irrefutable. If you're interested in looking up some of these for yourself, my favorite is Gladys Osborne Leonard. It was Charles Drayton Thomas who wrote the books about her. The primary spirit guide was named Fida, and apparently she didn't even speak English very well, but she spoke it very well through Gladys Osborne Leonard. And someone asked her, how come you can speak English? And she said, well, I'm not. I'm speaking my own language. You're hearing it in English, which I thought was fascinating. But they did some things which I think should have proven that life continues. One of the things they did was book tests. Think about this. Fida would give Dr. Thomas an address and say, go to this address and go to the second floor. Behind the door, there's a study, there's a bookshelf to the right, second shelf down, fourth book in, open it, and on the 32nd page, top line, this is what it says. That was a book test. He would write it down, he would post it to the British Society for Psychical Research, then he would go to this house and he would ask the confused householders if he could just please go to this room and check the book. He would do it. He said that the dead passed almost 95% of their book tests. This was something they had thought up because scientists were saying, they're getting good evidence, but they're just reading the minds of the living people in the room. They're not really getting anything from the dead. So this is something nobody in the room could have known what was on that line. We don't know how they read closed books, but they did this over and over again. By the time the book tests were coming through, unfortunately, the scientists who were at that point struggling with quantum mechanics, and they just couldn't take having to deal with the dead as well, they established materialism as the fundamental scientific dogma. It persists to this day. It is what has caused the havoc in science that the scientists won't tell you is there, but it's there. It's becoming worse and worse. Materialism. They know now nothing is material, but they follow it just the same. So at that point, people like Dr. Thomas had spent their lives documenting this miracle of great communications from the dead meant to convince us a century ago that we survive. And their lives were, in essence, wasted because the scientists that they were writing for would not even look at this material. They wouldn't even try to debunk it. They just ignored it. So that's where I started, was realizing that this had to be real. I then began to do reading of information about consciousness-based phenomena because, yeah, they survive, but what's going on? Where are they? How does it work? To know that people survive is not enough. We need to understand where it is that they are, how it is that they live, what the heck is going on. So that around the turn of this century, we started to get good quantum physics for dummies material, which is, you know, what I need since I'm a quantum physics dummy for sure. And the best book on this subject is called Quantum Enigma by Rosenblum and Kuttner. I recommend you read it. It's fun. It's easy. It's short. Doesn't seem like physics at all, but you end it convinced that everything that you think is going on around you is really, you know, entirely different from what you perceive. And that's fine because it's not scary. It's positive. And it fits perfectly with what the dead are telling us. My personal hero in this is Max Planck. He got the 1918 Nobel Prize as the father of quantum mechanics. He's a big deal to physicists to this day. And he discovered early in the 20th century that there is no matter as such. What did he say? By 1944, he was saying, I can tell you as a result of my research about atoms this much, there is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. In 1931, he had said, I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything we talk about, everything we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. Now, to someone who had been as frustrated as I in trying to understand what the dead were telling us, this was like food and drink, finding a scientist who basically was affirming everything I had learned. Einstein is another kind of big deal scientist, right? To all of us, including physicists. He said, concerning matter, we have been all wrong. What we have called matter is energy, whose vibration has been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. Now, all of these things were being said, you know, 60, 70, 80 years ago by the leading physicists. And they have been ignored to this day. In fact, I have heard from physicists who are so ticked at me for talking about this because they think, well, Einstein and Planck did good things too. They weren't always crazy is essentially their attitude. Never, ever enters their minds that, in fact, this is wisdom. I mean, they discovered the genuine God. They wouldn't have called him God, it God. It's not a him. It doesn't have a gender. It doesn't have a body. It's a profoundly loving, intensely powerful energy, and our minds are part of it. So when I started getting my mind around all of this, it was like all the lights went on. It was amazing. Somewhere I found insights which told me what God was, and it fits perfectly with what Max Planck had said, told me what reality is. Basically, it's like all the TV signals in your room. You've got a TV there, and right, you could tune it to one channel, and it picks up, quote, a reality there. Tune it to another slightly higher channel, new reality. Your mind is that TV set. Right now, it's tuned to the body that you think you're in, on the reality that we all share, that we think is real. It's not solid, it's not real. And when you die, all that happens is your mind tunes to a little bit higher channel and it picks up a whole new solid reality in the same place. We don't think it's miraculous anymore that TVs do this, but your mind is doing it too. Scientists know by now that there is no solid particle. even the tiniest subatomic particle. This, I think, was something Planck didn't know during his lifetime. But they've discovered that even the tiniest subatomic particle is a whirling vortex of energy. The reason you can't put your hand through the wall is they're made of the same kinds of vortices. Your vortices contradict the vortices in the wall, and you can't put your hand through it. That's all. Now, a person who is on a higher level of reality but in the same place easily can walk through the wall because there isn't this sort of denser, peculiar, energy-based matterish stuff that makes up this level of reality is just not on any other level. There's a reason why it's different here. There's a reason why we have a mathematics-based physics here, which is another thing physicists should wonder about but don't. Why can you use math to study all of this? Because it's an artificial physics. On this one level of reality, the physics is artificial, and it's that way for a very simple reason. In the rest of reality, which is most of reality, you can use your mind to influence matter very easily. And they want you to come here, take it seriously, take these spiritual lessons seriously, which is why the universe exists, and not mess with them. Basically, you'd cheat on all your exams if you could use your mind to mess with the matter here. So you can't. So as you can see, you begin to put it all together and you find that it makes sense. What the dead are telling us is consistent with what we're learning from quantum physicists, consistent with what we're learning from people who do consciousness research. I mean, they don't have a clue. I just read another article about apparently a bunch of Harvard physicists have figured out that people are conscious or not conscious based on something in the brainstem. So they're trying to say that must be what generates consciousness. That's like saying that some particular little gizmo inside your radio is what generates Frank Sinatra. That makes no sense. Your mind is a two-way radio in the head of a meat robot. That's all it is. It picks up your consciousness. Actually, it picks up the signal of your consciousness because your consciousness is always in eternal mind. It's part of God. It never leaves that. But it communicates with the body that you think you're in. And, you know, it thinks it's in your head, and because that's where your sensors are. You've got your eyes, you've got your ears. So it's very easy for you to imagine that you're located somehow inside that head. You're not. You're nowhere close. Any more than you would be in that TV or that radio. Those objects pick up a signal and communicate back. And that's all that's happening with your brain. Parenthetically, if you don't want to go through the process of the fun of dying, summarizes what I learned, and it has an annotated bibliography of some 70-odd books, including the ones I think were most instrumental in my coming to understand what was going on. So you can take a book like The Fun of Dying and then read whatever you sort of feel you need to read additionally in order to convince yourself of what's true. The truth is the truth, and the truth is something which stands up to scrutiny. And what's wonderful about it is that it stands up to repeated confirmation. I'll tell you my two favorites. I've mentioned these before on different programs for different reasons, but all right, here's the basic theory. There's we say seven major levels, it's actually infinite smaller levels of afterlife reality existing exactly where we are. It's in the same place, just like all those TV channels in your room are in the same place. And they're as solid as the Earth is, as this level is. And most of them seem to be about as big as the universe. So most of reality is not material. Well, then you start learning about dark matter and dark energy, right? And it turns out that the whole physical universe, according to physicists, is less than 5% of what exists, and 27 or thereabouts percent is dark matter, and 68 or thereabouts percent is dark energy. So you say, oh, all right, here's another way of approaching it. What could that be? If dark matter is the only reason they call them dark is they're not material. They don't interact with photons of light. So they're dark, but they're not sinister, and they're real, just as any kind of matter would be real. But what could it be? It's about the right size to be all those afterlife levels, right? It fits perfectly. What's the dark energy? The dark energy could very well be the source energy. It's two-thirds of what the physicists know exist. And they can't begin to tell us what any of this is. They're looking for weird little gluons and quarks and stuff, small, tiny, weird particles, and assuming, therefore, that most of reality is basically garbage. In this breathtakingly efficient and perfectly tuned universe, they're saying most of what exists is garbage. That makes no sense on any level, and it's not real. But do you see how this, you go, I'm looking at this sort of sideways now, and it still fits. It still works. And then you come across the fact that they have just recently, I think it was a year ago, discovered, or at least announced in my favorite magazine, Scientific American, announced that 80% of the light in the nearby universe has no source. It's not physical, and yet it's there. What is it? What could it be? So then you say, okay, well, we put together a basic understanding of the afterlife and how that works and how it fits with this life, and then we've in this level of reality, and then we've furthermore looked at dark matter and dark energy, and we think, you know, two-thirds of what exists is probably the source energy, basically God. They discovered God again. But then you say, what about the light? Well, let's look at this. When I was 8, I discovered spiritual light. It's much brighter than sunlight. And it's I think it's almost certain that source energy, that 68% of what scientists know exists, is giving off that 80% of the light in the nearby universe that seems to have no source. Do you see how it all fits? I have not found a single phenomenon which looked as if it was related that didn't actually fit when we thought about it. The problem is that if I had had, which I haven't had any scientific training, if I'd had scientific training, I could do this much better. I mean, we're all sort of, all of the afterlife researchers are well-trained in other fields, but we have careers and we have lives, but we're not scientists. Because if you're a scientist and you want to research this stuff, you can't have a traditional career. The gatekeepers, the university departments, the peer-reviewed journals will not allow you to touch any of this as a research project. And you've got to eat. You've got children to feed. You need to try to build some kind of a traditional career. Not all scientists are this way. There are some, probably 0.08%. We all know the wonderful Dr. Gary Schwartz. And there are others who are so fascinated with all of this that they have begun to research aspects of it. But golly, it is... When we have so much good evidence, and when it is so important to the future survival and to the world, that people begin to get a clue about what's going on, for there still to be this weird enforcement of an artificial dogma of materialism, even long decades after they know nothing is solid. How do we know they know nothing is solid? Because that's what the Great Hadron Collider was for, to find the Higgs boson. And the Higgs boson was some little thingy which was necessary in their construct to give all those tiny vortices of energy, which are all that exist, in there's nothing solid, to give them mass, to make them solid. You had to have a way to do it. So they posited the Higgs boson, and they believe now that they have actually found it using a billion-dollar collider. But the last time I looked, they still weren't sure how it worked. I mean, this is foolishness, this floundering around. There is grand overarching evidence of what actually is going on, and it fits with what the scientists are now doing. So unfortunately, sadly, tragically, you're stuck still with lawyers and other people who are trained in research but have no idea about basic science. We've had to be self-taught. Fortunately, though, it's not that hard to learn. We've done the hard work for you. Allura presents the evidence for the afterlife by Victor and Wendy Zammit is another wonderful resource for this information. I urge that if you don't have it already on your shelf. What for me was the ultimate proof that all of this was real was the day in my early 50s when I opened again my dusty Bible. I had put it aside around the age of 50, 51, when I realized that I couldn't find any evidence that the fundamental things I had believed as a Christian were true. And I was a really zealous Christian. I was bummed out like you cannot believe. But I seem to recall that Jesus had said some of this stuff. So one day, it was a rainy afternoon, a Saturday afternoon, I just picked up, dusted off my Bible, picked it up and read just the gospel red letters, the words of Jesus. And that was the greatest day of my life because Jesus had told us things 2,000 years ago that we couldn't have confirmed until now. He had told us things about God, reality, death, the afterlife, and the meaning and purpose of our lives that the dead are telling us today. They match perfectly. And this is astonishing, frankly, because the words of Jesus spoke Aramaic. The words were translated into Greek and from Greek into all modern languages. So I'm sitting there with my English Bible and, in English, and these words were spoken 2,000 years ago, two translations back, and they still fit perfectly in little ways. I mean, Jesus says to the woman at the well who has given him water, if you knew who you were, who asked you for water and the gift of God, you would have asked and he would have given you living water. Now, that's an odd term, living water. But the dead tell us that the water in the afterlife is alive. It gives off energy. It's not wet. You can walk into it and basically be restored and then can walk out of it dry. It's very different. Living water. They actually have that there. He knew that 2,000 years ago and two translations back. There are a number of things. There's an appendix in each of my fun books, which talks about all the amazing correspondences there are between what Jesus says in a modern translation of the Gospels and what the dead tell us. So that really was what convinced me that this all had to be true. And that was when I realized I had to write about it. And The Fun of Dying came out in 2010. If you're a Christian, you'll understand that why I say this. But before I let the book be published, I got down on my knees and I asked God that if this was not God's will that this book come out and these things be said, that he would please let me die now. Just take me. I'm happy to go. I don't want to do anything that's not your will. And obviously, I didn't die in 2010. So and since then, I've been given a whole lot of other work to do in this field. I mean, I wrote the book because I had given my life to God a year earlier. And God, when you do that, God takes you at your word like you cannot believe. Don't think of me as a religious person. There's a genuine God who is nothing like the Christian God. God is real, but those dogmas are not, fortunately, not real. And that's something I've talked about on other shows, and I'll talk about again. But the important thing for you to understand is that we have a witness. Call him Sam, doesn't matter who it was, who 2,000 years ago claimed to know this stuff, and he told us things which we could not have confirmed until today about so many different things that it's impossible for what I'm telling you about the afterlife and all the other things we've talked about not to be real. It's impossible. It has to be real. The correspondences make it mathematically impossible for it not to be real. Pretty exciting. So the problem we have now is that scientists won't look at this, and they won't look at that. They literally have their fingers deep in their ears and, they're humming loudly, eyes scrunched tight shut. They just don't want to know about it. You and I need to do the research there for ourselves, and I'll help you in any way I can. And we need one more thing. We need a way to beat them over the head. And that seems to be electronic afterlife communication. That seems to be the way that the dead, who, by the way, are totally leading this parade, the dead have determined it to be the way that they're going to break through the scientific blockade of knowledge. I've had Dr. R. Craig Hogan, and we've had others on too, who are working in the field of electronic communication with the dead. There are stations established in several countries all over the world, including the U.S., where the dead are working on basically a hardwired system that will, once it's fully operational, and they're working now to strengthen it, once it's fully operational, anybody will be able to have an app that will allow them to communicate with dead Aunt Mildred and get the recipe for her Christmas stolen or whatever you want to do. For parents who have lost a child, to talk to the child and know the child's okay and the name of the person caring for the child now. For spouses who were married for 60 years to be able to talk to one another and just, you know, say goodnight, dear. Whatever you want to do, to be able to have easy relationships across that divide. When enough of us are doing that on a regular basis, it will be impossible any longer for scientists to continue to ignore this. And if they do, then we'll just laugh at them. I mean, they make themselves ridiculous by not looking at this stuff. But the only way, really, to shame them into beginning to do that is for enough of us to have these kinds of communications with the dead, and basically for it to be common knowledge. Of course you can talk to the dead. I just talked to my uncle who died last month. He's doing fine. Okay. All right. Jig is up. We're going to have to look at what these people have been saying for all this time. But it has nothing to do with any religion. It is purely scientific. And it's easy, as you're seeing. I mean, if even I could do it, it's easy to research it. And everything is consistent. I think if we had to pick and choose among communications from the dead and find some that matched and hope they were right, that would be different. But I have never found an outlier. They're all telling us about the same amazingly complex greater reality that we all enter at death. I do think near-death experiences are a wonderful phenomenon. They're a phenomenon that seems to occur in a different part of the astral, not where the dead are, but in a place that the dead often visit too. So the wonderful experiences we have with our dead loved ones while our bodies sleep seem to happen in the same area of the astral. And when I say area, I'm talking bigger than the universe. We're talking very big places. We're used to feeling as if reality is tiny, but not, reality is gigantinormous, much bigger than anything we can imagine. So all of this is going to become common knowledge within the next decade, the dead are telling us. So it's a wonderful, exciting time to be alive. And in the second half of this century, the physics of consciousness, which Max Planck discovered, is going to be taught in schools. Your grandchildren are going to be learning it, and that's going to be really the only physics that matters, because the mathematics-based physics just works here. Let's get serious about what's really going on. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you really understand everything that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest will be Australian radio host Barry Eaton. Barry is another of the many people who have been recruited by those in spirit to help with the ongoing elevation of the consciousness of the planet that's going to save the world from destruction, which we'll talk about another time, but we'll talk about it some next week, and we'll talk about his book. Wonderful, he has written a couple, but my favorite is No Goodbyes. And a lot of other things as well. You're going to love Barry. He's a radio host, and he's just a terrific guy. Please join us next week. This week, your guest has been your host. I'm hoping to inspire you to try to get you to want to convince yourself that this is real. And the reason to do that is it does change everything. When you lose your fear of death, you have no fear of anything ever. Ever again. And it makes your life joyous in ways that I never imagined until I got there myself. So anything I can do to help you on your journey and help you to do this research for yourself, just let me know. You can always reach me through robertagrimes.com. Meanwhile, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. Soon they're all going to be available as audiobooks, believe it or not. I'm doing the reading for these audiobooks myself. Already I'm beginning to hear from listeners who love the result. When you're doing the reading, you think you're making a fool of yourself, but they say they turn out well, so I'm delighted. I'm also writing a 7-novel saga so I can share these truths with people who would rather explore them in stories. Chieftain's Maiden, set in I think it's 1540, and Jack in Love, set in 1968, begin a 4 centuries long saga that uses what we're learning from the dead to explore whether we might at last be able to advance the development of humankind and create an eternally peaceful world. These are big ideas. I think the stories are very entertaining, and I love writing them. So if you like reading fiction, please check them out. You can find them on my website or on Amazon. You can find recent episodes of Seek Reality on the bbmglobalnetwork.com. Earlier episodes are being rebroadcast on Green Vision 7 Radio and on X Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates worldwide at xzbn.net. The X Zone Broadcast Network is run by my wonderful friend Rob McConnell, and I just love what they do. He and I have fun whenever we talk, and he also does a lot of advertising for me, which I'm grateful for. Seek Reality is also, of course, available for free as podcasts on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. Just look for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. That's the only title I've ever had on any of these podcasts. And now there are almost 3.5 years worth of these available on iTunes. For more information about where I'm broadcasting now, if I ever move, or to read my blog, please read my blog. I love writing it for you. Or if you'd just like to contact me with a question or a comment, just go to robertagrimes.com. I answer every email. As I used to say, if you don't hear in 24 hours, send flowers. I have to say, there was one poor woman, I didn't get to her for 3 days this week. I feel terrible about it, but I just was swamped. But I answer every email, and I want to hear from you if you have a question or if there's something I can help you with. The most important thing I do with my life is help people on their journey toward the truth. Because as Jesus said, and he's right, the truth sets you free. It sets you free in ways beyond my ability to even begin to help you understand it. This is a wonderful, beautiful time to be alive. For all of human history, people didn't know the answer, could never find it. Now the answer is at hand. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.